was really informative. Just before we start, I just wanted to comment the importance of savings. And most of you may have heard of Peter Peterson in the U.S. starting his foundation, and he's giving away $1 billion. And the priority in his foundation is going to be how to get Americans to save more money. So this is something that's on the minds of a lot of people out there, and people are actually putting money out there to see how can we move forward in this direction. So I'd like to open the floor for questions for our three presenters.
Questions to Desjardins. We have heard a lot about microcredit, and obviously Desjardins, microcredit based on social collateral, and you've had extensive experience in Africa, as you could see from 1972. Somehow the co-op model doesn't use social collateral. So what are the learning experiences that you've had, and what it is that you've done that may be comparable to the Grameen Bank type social collateral? What are the things that you think you can do better, or not better, differently, or, you know, what are the lessons learned here?
When I was talking about the mistakes we made in Burkina Faso, we used collateral. That's the only thing we used. And we were pushed by the microfinance institutions that started. And we started also with social guarantees. We used, now we use anything we can find. And we try to find what is really important for someone. What he or she wouldn't want to lose. It could be a boo-boo, it could be jewels, it could be anything. Just try to focus on what they don't want to lose. And we make a mix of everything we can find, basically.
How do you value it?
For instance, for jewels, in Senegal, it's really, really important. So we have some people who will evaluate them at the Ministry of the Mines. Well, it's cooperative, so it doesn't belong to us. So, they are so different from. I could show you the numbers, but they are so different from one country to another. And we just started to, for instance, what was the rate of return you were? Oh. There's no ristourne, individual ristourne so far. There are community ristourne in some countries, but it's very well. We try not to to open the door too much on that. It depends. Some of our networks are very, very well capitalized, way over what BAL requires. Desjardins provides some funds each year, but we use it as a leverage to get funds from other funders. We have maybe 50%, 50 to 60%, depending on the years, from SIDA. We are financed by the Gates Foundation, World Bank, some government also, directly from some government. So. There are some programs with SIDA that we have to put a specific percentage. So it can be, in some cases, maybe one tier, in some cases 10%, that depends. We also, Desjardins provides us also with the technical expertise. That's also why I showed the structure. We have 35,000 employees that are able to work with us also.
I have a question for Daniel and for Hans. You two are at the two extremes. You are kind of the open blue sky and he is hell. Is there in between models where we could think of markets where the cost of virtue is not too high and social that have from the beginning more of the pragmatism of making things work in a sustainable manner? I know that Professor Yunus wants eventually to have a social Wall Street. So I'd like to elaborate a bit on the two extremes, either you two or anyone who can provide insight.
Of course, we get these questions many times. So on the social business model, as Professor Yunus invented, it's clear, is a very straight one. So we doesn't accept any dividend. We doesn't accept any compromise in the whole stuff. But we have nothing against all the other models who will be created out of this inspiration. Let's see it. You have now a very... make it in black and white. So let's see, the social business is white, and let's see the other one is black, and you have different ways in between. There's somebody who goes on a dark green, and you can go in this and this direction. Each one of them is good. We also doesn't say that then the normal business is bad. You know, we need normal business. All what we say, what we would like to create, is this clear social business, who is selfless, who is done for you and for you. And this gives us a navigation. And so we concentrate, or Professor Yunus and Grameen, we concentrate purely on this social business, and then other people do other business, and that's fine, that's good, nothing against this. But what we like to create, and if you're using Professor Yunus' name as an inspiration, doesn't matter as a microcredit or doesn't matter as a social business, in respect of his way, what he's doing, you should be very clearly if you follow his principle or you just use his name. So what Professor Yunus wants to do is giving some examples. We're talking about maybe if it runs good in 10 years, about 3-5% of the whole world economic, you know, if it runs very good. At the moment, we're not seen even as 3 promils. So, but it's an example in the very difficult decade, the next decade, where we can have a small star in the sky to get with our boat a navigation. But we have nothing against other stuff.
We've heard a lot of interesting examples of financial empowerment, primarily through the use of microcredit. And some have been in rural and Africa and Philippines, and even yours is in downtown New York. And I guess what I'm interested in knowing is, can you take a model and use the same model in a poor country and in a rich country like Canada in an urban setting? Or what kind of adaptations or changes do we need to think about to have this kind of model work in a richer country where we're also trying to empower the poor?
If it's okay with everyone, I'll start. That was one of the issues that Professor Yunus had when we were taking the model from Bangladesh to the United States. How can you provide a service to the poor in a country that has a different level of economics? And his view is that people are people, and poor people in one country are the same as poor people in another. It's just the currency is different, and the magnitude of what defines poor is different. Someone in Bangladesh with $26,000 can have a chauffeur, a maid, and a fine home. Someone living in New York City is living below the poverty line. The big change that had to be determined, and this was a difficult change, was to take the average size loan from under $200 to $3,000 at the time. And that was the only change in the program. So that was a financial risk, obviously, that you're putting more money at risk in order to test the model. But that was all that was at risk. The people were the same. They had the same issues. They were going into the same business. They had the same issues with their family. And our implementation was very simple. I think it's also a level of opportunity in these countries. If you travel through different parts of the world, and if you've never seen a marble floor, or running water in your home, or electricity, or a 46-inch big screen TV, you don't know you're missing it. So when I was visiting villages in Bangladesh, a person who was accomplished and was successful was one who had two cows and some chickens, a wooden floor, a piece of furniture, and a tin roof, and high success was someone who had a lock on their door. So who are we to say that these people are not successful in them being happy with what they have?
If I can elaborate on your question, we have a division called Financité in French. We call it Planet Venture in English. We raised a venture capital fund last year in Paris, 2 years ago. And the idea is to make equity infusion in small business around Paris. So we're bringing back what we've learned around the world. And we tweak the model. First of all, we're using equity as an instrument instead of debt, because we think it's innovative. We think it's tough to do equity because your required rate of return is much higher than debt. Debt, you collect an interest. You know, it's not that tough. But it also gives partners to those entrepreneurs. And when the bank is not talking to you because you don't have collateral, you don't have assets, you don't have a credit score that is acceptable or it's broken, if you show up with an equity investor, suddenly the bank is willing to at least read the documents because somebody else has invested in you. So, and we're not thinking in terms of poor. We're thinking in terms of access to financial services of quality. And it boils down to what do you think microfinance is. If microfinance is small loans, interest rate to poor people, then loan sharks are microfinance. Exactly. But if you think microfinance is developing financial services of quality to the unbanked and underbanked, then you open the door to many other products and services that we can offer.
Of all the models that you have mentioned here, the one I'm most familiar is Desjardins. We've been funding that organization for many years. But I'm very interested in learning more about how to invest more in social organizations, how we can support more the social organization, because it's a big part of our work to support communities in rural areas. We don't work very much in urban areas, but we work a lot in rural areas in poor countries. And there is a need to strengthen those organizations, and I want to hear from any of you how can developing agencies improve the work or work more or channel more funds toward social organizations, toward communities that are in rural areas. We are not investors. We cannot use equity, which is a little bit of a limitation that we have. So I would like to hear some of your ideas in that sense.
In my mind, there is no doubt that the capitalism is the best economic system, but it must be regulated by the government of state. And I think that with the recent financial nightmare, we have done the proof that we need the government. It's not just for 1 year, it's for a long period of time. The two consideration regarding the investment business, take the hedge funds industry that I know quite well. During many decades, they argue that they don't need regulation because all the transaction, the profit of the transaction is based off of the detention of information, the value of the information. And if there is a regulation, you permit the situation where the competitors could see what was your strategy, what was your investment policy. But in fact, that Chinese wall, sometimes we call it a black box, especially the big mathematical modeling. It's what just the fact to keep the control of the situation, and now we accept that the hedge funds industry should be regulated and will be regulated. And you can be sure that profit will be done too, despite that regulation effort. Another aspect in finance which is interesting is the increasing amount invested in the ethical equities funds. You don't provide the same rate of return, of course. But some investors, more and more investors, want to hold a part of the portfolio in this type of investment, not just a religious organization, but private investors too. And it's a way to contribute to social economy.
Who are the social investors? I mean, institutionals, privately, high net worth individuals, and what types of investments are they looking for? Are they looking for just a social return? Are they looking for an environmental return? Are they looking at companies that are particularly well governed, or what are they? What kind of products are they asking for? In Europe, has been quite good at developing socially responsible investing products and assets that have attracted a lot of wealth. The U.S. concentrates its socially responsible investing in religious and faith-based organizations. So I'm curious, what's the deal in Canada?
In fact, that trend definitively comes from Europe, and it's more important in Canada compared to the United States, of course. Some investors are pension funds, big pension funds, wanting to act with socially responsible, to be a part of the social responsibility and to be ethical, in fact. And I don't manage this type of strategies, unfortunately. I don't have a great knowledge about the investment policy, but sometimes the investors will ask not to invest in the weapon producers, of course, or chemical firms who produce pesticides, and you know, this type of limitation in the type of transaction, and it's a part of the investment policy, the written investment policy.
Maybe I'll say something.
I was waiting for that.
Well, I wasn't, because I don't do anything in microfinance. I've never done anything, but I'm interested. Okay? I think it's good. I also think it's good that the aid agencies are doing a lot of work and spending a lot of resources. But if you really look at the global situation over the last, I don't know, take whatever horizon you want to take, 10 years, 20 years, the biggest contribution has been from private money. Look at multinational firms, look at portfolio flows, look at commercial bank. Of course, each one of these have had its problems. You know, nothing is easy and nothing is free. But the fact is, there has been a lot of funds flow that has gone over to many developing countries from many different sources. And then the question is it social? In my mind, at least, a lot of it has been social, one way or the other. Now, you can say that a lot of this money was ill-used. It went to the very rich, and the gap between the rich and the poor has expanded. Well, I'd like to see a lot more information on that, because there's always, as I call them, the red-eyed economists who are willing to jump on anything that is private sector. But I don't think the jury is out on this yet, and I'm happy to debate anybody anywhere if anybody wishes to. But the fact is, these flows have done a lot of good, not as good as they should have. I'm the first one to admit that. But the fact is, they have. And I think that should be a part of the social capital, as you call it, social capital, simply because, I mean, just take a look at one example. North America is getting old demographically. Developing countries, or emerging markets, as they call them now, this was a term that was debated and coined at the World Bank in a small room with three people in that room, I being one of them, with Antoine Wanakuma, if people know him, and David Gill, who used to run the IFC at that time. And the fact is, a lot of the money from developed countries have gone into emerging markets. And the reason is very simple. You got better opportunities to make money because the growth rates are high. You got risk diversification. Of course, risk diversification has reduced over time. And of course, you know, given the demographics, as the Americans and Canadians and the Japanese, as they retire and start reducing their holdings, somebody has to buy that stuff. And who's going to buy that stuff? It will be bought by people from emerging markets. Not all of them, mind you, because some of them also have the same problem in terms of demographics. But a lot of them have very young populations. For example, in Bangladesh that you talk about, I think 50% of the population is below 25. Now, the question is, will they be able to buy these things? And the answer is not quite, not yet. But the fact is, it behooves us that we help these markets and these populations to improve them on the ladder, so when the time comes, which is coming very fast, they will be able to pick up those assets which Americans and the Canadians and the Japanese and the Europeans would want to sell. So, you know, this is all a part of social capital, if you want to call it social capital. And I would not just say that there is only microfinance or it has to be clearly aid, etc. I think private capital has a lot of role to play here. I think I said too much. Thank you.
I would like to have two comments, one of this on the investor, on the social activist, on the social institution. What I observe around the world, the design of the most goodwill activist is done, then I try to observe my neighbors, the circumstance around, and I want to do something, and I want to do something, then it's changed. And then I ask others to give me money for it and to help to me, you know? So I go to the government, I go to the big companies, I go to rich people, I see something, and the design of the most models is I do something good, and because I do something good, I get the feeling I can come to you and ask you, hey, can you give me some money, then I do something good. So on the business model, it's always on the different sides to say, okay, I perform, and from the performance, I be self-sustained. So what we can learn is to build up new constellation between business and social activist and see what we can learn in the future. And to you, gentlemen, it just comes in my mind because I listen all over the world to so much big, good financial sector. And sometimes I was thinking, did we totally forgot that every single penny what we have, it comes out from the nature? From where we take this money? It's all done from Mother Earth. It's every single penny since 240 years. We take it out of the nature. how much we give it back. We loaned it only from the nature. We give it from trees, we give it from oil, we give it from everything, the food what the nature gives it to us. Now the whole financial system is built to be totally disconnected to the nature. So what I guess what we have to find out, that all the money what we have, every single penny, every single stuff, it's out of nature. And if it doesn't create a new interface to the nature with the money, to be self-sustained and to have to give the next generation, you say it so nicely, the generation is not responsible of the past, but they are responsible future. So if it doesn't connect the financial system to the interface to the nature, we will miss it, because we all act like the financial system is something totally independent on the natural habit. And we need water, we need air, we need resources and all this stuff. So I think one of the most important stuff is to connect the financial system much more closer to this where we all live on it, and this is on the interface to the nature.
No. I agree with you, because the issue is really, you raised a very important issue. The issue is, does the Wall Street work for the Main Street?
Yeah.
Okay? And it doesn't, quite. Now, the question is, this is the big question. How do you do it? Okay? I would like to hear how. I mean, I fully agree with what you say. That's not the issue. The issue is, how do you do it? We have a system, and there is nothing that is better than that system. Mm-hmm. If you have a better system, I'll be the first one to sign on to it.
This is a good point on which to end the morning session.
You can think about this at lunch, and remember that in the afternoon we are coming back to the third panel on communities and nations, but we're also at the end going to wrap up talking about the top three business strategies and societal challenges and opportunities to bring to the think tank. So this is a challenge, yes.